Mini episode 1807 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1807. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries with us today, the great sports writer from our Sports Central, Fran Stuckberry. And most of the time when we're having him on to talk football. And within that, most of the time we're having him on to talk college football. And you would be right in guessing that we're going to talk college football with him today. Specifically, we are going to look back at the 2024-2025 National Championship game between Ohio State and Notre Dame, as well as a larger look at the rest of the College Bowl season. So, Fran, good to have you back on the show here, my friend. We've taken a look at the playoffs here previously, and we did our preview of the National Championship game, and it's good to give a bookend of the situation with you.
I'm glad to be back here, Rick, and championship game was an entertaining game. What I thought was going to be a blowout, Notre Dame hung in there, fought back. I give them credit for fighting back, Rick.
They did. They really put a scare into Ohio State, and I can tell you, as somebody that was at an Ohio State watch party for the game that my dad was hosting, did put a scare into them. And it's one of those things where it's a little bit surprising in terms of the execution of the game. It was the one large play to Jeremiah Smith. I'd said coming into the game, one of the main reasons I was picking Ohio State to win and to cover, which was something I needed, by the way, to put me above 52.4% for the year on my picks. But I was right about that, in that Ohio State would be able to go to him more against Notre Dame than they were against Texas, because Texas is one of the few athletes that it's one of the few schools, I should say, that has athletes that can put on him and maybe even double team with some of these great athletes. But it was the one big play late to Smith that broke it open, that basically clinched it for Ohio State, gave them the chance to get the field goal to put it away. But it was really a tough second half for Ohio State moving the ball. That's what let Notre Dame back into the game. But at the end of the day, I think you saw it more so in the first half than in the second half, aside from the big play to Smith. What I said coming in is how it played out in terms of the talent gap on the field and the number of 3 stars versus 4 stars and 5 stars. This level of separation, we saw it during the playoffs consistently, and you saw it again in the national championship game. At the end of the day, Notre Dame does not have the horses to win a game like this unless they play a perfect game, and they did not.
No, they didn't. Notre Dame did not play a perfect game. And the first drive was amazing. The quarterback played like Tim Tebow with that drive, Rick, reminded me of.
Yeah. I mean, he was really sensational. Leonard was getting it done early on, and then Ohio State was having some success with the run on their part, but it almost felt like a little bit of a trap because, I mean, you don't want to let Ohio State move the ball on you by run or by pass. But what has happened sometimes here, and I really thought it was happening, I thought Ryan Day was maybe kind of clinching up in the big moment, but ultimately they were able to be successful using the run as much as they were. Sometimes Ryan Day's had a chance to be too conservative in certain instances, like, every one of the last 4 games that he's coached against Michigan, for example. But here, it was the run and the pass. It was a balance that was helping them to win. And ultimately, it was the passing accuracy of Will Howard, of just slicing and dicing the defense when he did go back to pass. And a game that, for as much as some people were kind of snide during the season about, was Will Howard really an upgrade over Kyle McCord? And I think Kyle McCord, after having a successful year, at least by his standard, at Syracuse, was kind of saying the same thing, kind of like hinting on social media, like, hey, this guy didn't beat Michigan either. But you saw, in stark contrast, the difference between what Will Howard can do and what Kyle McCord can do in the national championship game.
Yeah, I mean, he made big plays throughout that game. And then that fourth quarter, that pass to the wide receiver, Rick, mm-hmm. that was the clincher.
It was. It put it away. And it was something that, again, Notre Dame, they had an opportunity going into the fourth quarter to pull it out, but it was going to be contingent on Ohio State basically choking at that point. They weren't really going to be able to do it without turnovers there. We said coming into the game, I think turnovers would be instrumental for Notre Dame in a game like this, that when you're outmanned in terms of the recruiting talent on the field, you basically need everything to go your way, which you saw. I mean, Notre Dame had surmounted it previously against Georgia, because Georgia is another one of those teams, you know, Georgia, Texas, Ohio State, in whatever order. Some people were putting Alabama in there at the beginning of the year, but it doesn't seem to have been the case. But basically, any of those teams that have that level of recruiting talent, Notre Dame is going to struggle to beat. They did get past Georgia. When they played Penn State in the semifinals, that was more, in the semifinals, that was more of a deal where they were sort of on an even footing. So for a school like Notre Dame, it's sort of at this point, even with the progress that they've made under Freeman, it's contingent on the right draw, and it's contingent on drawing the right team. If you have to face one of these teams with top-tier recruiting talent, it better not be a team that's on a mission like Ohio State was, because, again, looking back at it with what happened with Michigan, that just lit the fuse. And I think Ryan Day, similar to in 2022, when Ohio State came out with nothing to lose against Georgia in the national semifinals in the Peach Bowl and almost got it done. He kind of clenched up a little bit on the last drive there and like, oh, well, if our kicker can make the 75-yard field goal, we'll win the game. At the end, he reverted to his old habits, but prior to that, he had kind of opened it up, let it loose, kind of figured that there was nothing left to lose. You saw the same thing 2 years later through the course of the four games, and this time they were successful in the end.
All in all, Rick, I mean, the new playoff format gave opportunities to teams that ordinarily wouldn't have had it, so kudos to the playoff committee for expanding to 12 teams. You know, a year ago, if Ohio State lost to Michigan, they would have had nothing to look forward to. Notre Dame would have had no chance at all. So, I'm excited. I'm excited about the future of the playoffs. I'm excited about it as well. I mean, this bowl season in general, Rick, all together, I mean, ratings were up over 20% compared to last year. So, kind of like the people still watch. I'm shocked. Could be because so many transfers and everything else. I guess a lot of people still love watching football, Rick.
Absolutely, and we will get to the bowl season here, the rest of it, in a little bit. But yes, you're right about that the numbers were up. Is it the impact of more widespread gambling? That could have something to do with it as well. But in looking at this here, the old system versus the new system, again, I was a guy, and this was something that I explained. My friend Joe Stazek was nice enough to have me on his show, The Philly Pulse, couple weeks back, and in between talking about the Eagles, we were talking about the national championship in college, and it was a thing where I got into it and said, you know, I guess I'm a little bit of a turd in the punch bowl about this system, because I always wanted just a four-team playoff. I wanted a four-team playoff back when it was two. I thought that was the perfect number. You didn't have 12 teams to fill it out this year. Let's be perfectly honest. I mean, the fact that Alabama was in consideration until the last weekend, when two of their three losses were pretty stinky, that just kind of tells you that it was watered down. The first round really kind of showed you that it was watered down. And again, I had more excitement and more enjoyment with this system than I thought it was going to be. But the fact remains, like you said, if this was a year ago, I'll tell you exactly what happens. Notre Dame goes to a bowl, and they probably win because Freeman is good at keeping them motivated. Ohio State goes to a New Year's Six bowl and chokes and finishes ninth in the standings, and Ryan Day gets fired. So that's how it would have gone if this was the system of a year ago. So I've had, for my good friend FDH Lounge fellow original dignitary Chris Galloway, who wanted a system like this, he was kind of chiding me a bit and like, well, don't you have to admit that like a team like Ohio State got a chance to prove they were the best on the field? I said, you could look at it that way, or you could look at it and say it's completely random, because in any other year in the history of college football, their season would have been a complete failure. Again, Ryan Day gets fired. It's an alternate history that basically happens. And so it's a thing where the regular season really did get watered down a bit, because we've been on this path for a while. It used to be if you lost one game in the regular season, you might be eliminated from playoff consideration. That was when it was a two-team playoff. So it's a watering down of the regular season, to be sure. And I think what it comes down to, I mean, I've got my opinion, you've got yours, Fran, and I think for each and every one of us, and this is what I said on my friend Joe's show, it comes down to the trade-off that we're willing to make. How much of the watering down of the regular season is worth it to us for the enjoyment that we get in the month of the playoffs? And that's something that we all look at probably a little bit differently.
Well, also, Rick, I mean, they're saying they want to, after next season, they want to expand it to 14 teams. I mean, it's really necessary, but hey, man, if it makes more money, they'll do it.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that, that they will expand it to more teams, and that's going to be the whole thing around what happens with the buys, what happens with any type of concern there about who's getting the buys for the conferences. It takes unanimous consent to amend the format through next year. The year after, it doesn't. So the conferences, you know, the Big 12, the ACC, they're not giving up their chances at a bye. The Mountain West, whatever their slim chances would be of getting a bye again, they're not going to give that up. Under the new system, it will be just teams rated 1 through 4 in whatever order. I don't even think it's going to be an automatic SEC and Big Ten championship bye, because my guess is, like, how are you going to win those conferences and not be in the top four anyways? Although maybe they're going to look for and be able to get guarantees. I don't know. But it's a circumstance where it really played out. We learned an awful lot. Our whole lives, we'd wondered what would happen if this kind of system had ever come in. And we've seen it. And now that kind of gives us something to look forward to for next year. Anything that we extracted from this to find out, well, how much of it is always going to be that way, and how much of this is going to kind of change as far as the fabric of a season from year to year, and how long some teams are going to remain in the playoff hunt.
One thing, Rick, I wouldn't mind is more home playoff games, not just the first rounds. I know they'd have to, less of the bowl games, but I wouldn't mind having more, like second round or third round games on at the campus. But I don't think they're going to give those bowls away for that.
Yeah, those were very warmly received. They really were. And I think people do want to see more of the games that are on campus. So we will talk a little bit here about the other parts of bowl season here. I think we took a look back somewhat at what was the path that Ohio State and Notre Dame took to get to the national championship game here. But we'll start with any remaining thoughts that we have on the playoff. Of course, the first weekend, Notre Dame over Indiana, Penn State over SMU, Texas over Clemson, Ohio State over Tennessee. All of the home teams winning, most by pretty comfortable margins. Then you get to what would have been the New Year's Six timeline here with a New Year's Eve game, triple header on New Year's Day. Penn State over Boise in the Fiesta Bowl. Texas over Arizona State in a thrilling Peach Bowl here that really seemed like it could have gone either way. The Sun Devils were very game and stayed in it the whole way. Ohio State gets off to a shocking 34-0 start on Oregon and dispatches them 41-21. Notre Dame, Georgia in the game that happened the day after. So we actually didn't get the triple header, I guess, as I'm looking at it here, because of the terrorism incident in New Orleans. Notre Dame pulls off the upset the next day, 23-10. Then you get to the semifinals, Ohio State over Texas, 28-14. The strip sack by Jack Sawyer, which will go down as one of the iconic defensive plays probably of the 21st century. That one puts it away. On the field where Ohio State gagged against Missouri a year ago, so erasing some of those memories from the Cotton Bowl. Also on the field where Ohio State won the first four-team playoff back from the 2014-2015 season. So that would be a little foreshadowing for what would come for them the next game. And then, of course, Ohio State with a 34-23 win, as we indicated thus far. So I'll start with this. Any additional thoughts that you have about the first round playoff games and then subsequently on to the quarterfinals and the semis?
Well, the first round playoff games, the home field advantage was so you know, dominant for what, you know, with the weather, the fan atmospheres. Some people thought some of the games would be closer, and they were all massacres. But then again, in the past, Rick, those games were massacres as well. So it's not a big surprise. I mean, it took a long time for 16 to beat a one men's college basketball. So, I mean, seeing upsets on the home campuses is going to take a while.
I think so. It'll happen eventually, but it wasn't going to happen this year with some of the teams that were in on the back end of the seedings. Looking at the college football season and here with the bowl season, just going kind of week by week, I'm mostly going to leave this open for your thoughts, Fran, because I don't have a whole lot of thoughts on some of these games. An exception to that will be, from the first week, the Cure Bowl on December 20th, my Ohio Bobcats bouncing back in splendid fashion from losing our head coach, who shockingly decided to take the, I would say, demotion to go coach at Charlotte. Nevertheless, Ohio State hangs on against Jacksonville State 30-27 in a win, a game that was a rare one in bowl season between conference champions. So in looking at the first week of the bowl season, the Bulls encroaching shamefully, I would say, on the Army-Navy game, albeit they throw a little bone to the military by calling this game the Salute to Veterans Bowl, South Alabama over Western Michigan. Subsequent games that week, Frisco Bowl, Memphis over West Virginia, the Boca Raton Bowl, James Madison triumphs over Western Kentucky, the LA Bowl, it's UNLV over California, the New Orleans Bowl, Sam Houston 31, Georgia Southern 25, the aforementioned Cure Bowl with the glorious victory by the Ohio Bobcats. From there, the Gasparilla Bowl, Florida 33, Tulane 8, keeping going their late season run that they were on. So, your thoughts, any that you have on the first week, Fran?
Well, Memphis having a 10-win season is good for the Tigers. They're a type of team that can compete for a group of six playoff spots next season. They're a team to keep an eye on for. In the Boca Raton Bowl, James Madison wins the first ever bowl game. Woohoo! Go yeah. Dukes! And a good season for UNLV to, you know, to get out there, and after a heartbreaking loss in the Mountain West Championship, they won. And then you have the Arnold Carriers Bowl. Sam Houston wins their first ever bowl game. Another good one for them as well. And as far as the Gasparilla Bowl, one game was a blowout for Florida. Maybe that'll be a building momentum for them in the next season. The thing is, Rick, Florida will probably be a team that can maybe win a game or two against a tough team, but I don't think they're going to crack the elite four or five teams in the SEC.
Yeah, and I will tell you, as a Tennessee fan, I am very happy that they're hanging on to Billy Napier for another year. And I have some neighbors that are big Florida fans that I cannot imagine are very psyched about the fact that they're not going to be able to get rid of him. So, such is life. You look at the games over the next week of the bowl season, starting on December 23rd, as they took a brief little respite here to make room for the NFL, because outside of you know, the first round of the college football playoffs, they had been able to stay away from the NFL, which is what they generally try to do. So resuming on December 23rd with the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, Northern Illinois wins a tough one in 2-0 over Fresno State 28-20. In the Hawaii Bowl, the traditional Christmas Eve game, it's South Florida over San Jose State. In the Game Above Sports Bowl, Toledo over Pittsburgh in a multiple overtime game, 48-46. In the Rate Bowl, it's Kansas State 44, Rutgers 41, that one in Phoenix. The 66 Ventures Bowl, or 68 Ventures Bowl, as I'm squinting to see the thing here. Arizona State 38, Bowling Green 31. That makes me sad. Bowling Green is my mom's alma mater. The Armed Forces Bowl, Navy pulling off the upset over Oklahoma, or was it with the kind of year Oklahoma had? Who knows? But 21-20. the Birmingham Bowl. It's Vanderbilt over Georgia Tech. So Vanderbilt finishes one of the strongest seasons that they've had in a long time. In the Liberty Bowl, it's Arkansas dispatching Texas Tech. The Holiday Bowl, Syracuse all over Washington State, 52-35. And in the Las Vegas Bowl, USC 35, Texas A&M 31. So as you look at these, again, that wraps up that week of the bowl season. So thoughts that you have on the week two of the college football bowl season, Fran?
On the Illinois bowl game, you got the coach got done with French fries. During the post-game press conference, he says that's the best dump he ever took in his life. He must have never ate Chipotle before. South Park joke.
Yes, apparently.
And then we go to the Hawaii Bowl. Rick, during the first preview, you said the Hawaii Bowl would be fun, entertaining game to watch, and it was very entertaining, all those overtimes.
Yeah.
It's good to see him. I mean, before Santa comes down the sled, they saw a fun game. Hopefully, I'm glad the game ended before midnight so the kids didn't see Santa. So.
Yeah, and I forgot to watch it after saying on the bowl preview season show that I was looking forward to it. I forgot to tune in to it, and I had no excuse for doing so. So that was kind of sad. But
and you also said the game above Sports Bowl was going to be good, one in Detroit, and that was even better than the Hawaii Bowl.
Yes, and it was there were a number of pretty good games that were that week.
And Kansas State, I mean, overcoming a 17-point deficit in the rate ball against Rutgers. That's a nice comeback for Kansas State for them and a positive season. And the Armed Forces Bowl with Navy, they beat Army, a 10-win season. Commander in Chief's Trophy, good momentum for Navy and next season. Oklahoma, oh man, I don't know what they're going to do in the SEC, Rick. I can't see them. I know they made changes in recruiting, but I don't see them getting to maybe middle of the pack. What do you think about Oklahoma, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get from here to there in another year. So it really kind of makes you wonder what's going on with Brent Venables, that they're not going to be able to make a leap, I think, quickly. They showed that this year with a very underwhelming debut in the SEC.
And in Birmingham Bowl, Diego Pavia, he fights yesterday, he gets another year of eligibility. Good for him, because Rick, he's not an NFL prospect. He must make NIL money. I will make another prediction here. Vanderbilt's going to get to another bowl game 2 years in a row. They have the quarterback, they have the offense, they have the coaches. They'll make a bowl game next season.
I think that's a pretty safe bet, in as much as these days, generally speaking, if you can get to 6 wins, you'll make it there. So,
And as for your Syracuse quarterback, Dylan McCord, is he an NFL prospect, Rick?
Not at all.
Carter Mines want to know, is he yes or no?
He is not. Look at the draft rankings out there. Can the guy be a clipboard holder over the long term? Possibly. He could be a guy who basically lingers at the fringes of the NFL for quite a long time without playing an awful lot. That's possible. But then that's all you're looking at with him.
And this Las Vegas Bowl, this was a surprise. I mean, USC showed up and played well in the bowl game, but thing is, I don't know what USC is going to do next year in the Big Ten, Rick. The Big Ten is going to be tough. I don't know if they're going to be able to do much better. Maybe a little bit, but not by much.
It's an interesting bookend of the season for them, because if I remember correctly, I think they opened in Sin City week one against LSU there. And that was a game that really didn't go their way. So it was, or am I remembering that wrong? I can't remember which of those disappointing teams actually won that game.
Well, they beat LSU. They beat LSU.
They won. Okay. All right. I just remember one of those teams kind of getting exposed there. So, all right. So it took a little longer for SC to get exposed during the season. Not a memorable season by either team, to be sure. You go into the weekend of Saturday, December 28th, as we continue to go through the bowl season here. The Fenway Bowl, UConn 27, North Carolina 14, in a matchup of college basketball powers. And that was one where, again, Bill Belichick getting his first look at the team that he would be getting ready to take over, as we covered in a previous mini-episode. The Pinstripe Bowl, so also a northeast shivering game, this one at Yankee Stadium. Nebraska over Boston College 20-15. The New Mexico Bowl, TCU blowing out Louisiana. The Pop-Tarts Bowl, the very festive game there, one of the highlights of bowl season. Notre Dame 42, Miami 41. in a game where I know we'll talk about this. Miami mysteriously didn't have its quarterback in the second half. Also that day, I always take great pleasure in calling them Miami of Ohio, as a good Ohio grad, because they hate being called Miami of Ohio. Miami of Ohio did get it done against Colorado State in the Arizona Bowl. I won't read the score because it was by a decent margin, and I don't want to give them that level of credit. In the Military Bowl, East Carolina over NC State, 26-21. The Alamo Bowl, BYU over Colorado, 36-14. This was supposed to be a showcase game for some of Colorado's big stars. It didn't play out that way at all. The Independence Bowl, Army way over Louisiana Tech. In the Music City Bowl, Missouri gets by Iowa, 27-24. That was about as good of a game as we thought it might be coming in. The ReliaQuest Bowl, showing that even without Nick Saban being at Alabama, they still had the opportunity for a letdown in a year when they didn't make the playoff, 19-13. That was reminiscent of when I think Alabama got boat raced. I think it was by Hawaii the one year in the Sugar Bowl. The Sun Bowl, Louisville over Washington, 35-34. That was kind of a thriller. The Citrus Bowl, Illinois over South Carolina, another pretty close game. And that was one where the coaches got a little bit chippy. And the Texas Bowl, LSU 44, Baylor 31. So that was the next week of the bowl season here. And there are a couple of games that took place after the college football quarterfinals. We'll get to them in a moment. But your thoughts on the rest of the games leading up to the end of the calendar year 2024.
Well, Rick, I mean, UConn had a 10-win season. They played, Jim Moore Jr. got a contract extension. The only problem is, Rick, they're an independent. And then he whined about players, other teams poaching these players from transfer portal. What do you expect? They can't do anything better than UConn. I mean, UConn's a good football program, but then their basketball team is never going to lead the Big East, Rick. I mean, will another conference that only teach them as football only? Would the Pac-12 actually do that? I don't think so.
Yeah. That's an interesting scenario, definitely.
As far as Nebraska getting the first bowl win since 2016, that was a fun game to watch. Nebraska played good defense, a little bit of rain at Yankee Stadium. As far as the Pop-Tarts Bowl, this game I have a lot to say. The Miami quarterback plays, gets the record for most touchdown passes, then sits on the bench. Don't play at all, please. I mean, I don't get it. It's a meaningless record, Rick. Someone's going to break it eventually. I don't get this nonsense. I'm like, I hope he's a bust in the NFL. I don't think he will be, but I hope he's a bust.
I don't think he will be either. I'll say this about Cam Ward, is that I give him at least somewhat more credit than the players who, and this is what really confuses me, players who travel to the games and don't play. Like, I remember last year, and I really don't want to criticize Marvin Harrison Jr. because he had an outstanding career at Ohio State, but I was very, very much puzzled by the fact that he traveled to Dallas with the team, went through the drills, everything, and it was a game day decision that he wasn't going to play. And what's interesting is Cam Ward took a lot of abuse for playing half a game because it was thought that he quit on the team. If Marvin Harrison Jr. had pulled out ahead of time, I think everybody would have looked at it like, hey, you know, you don't want to end up like Jake Butt a couple of years ago, you know, get your knee torn up, miss your whole first year. Although I understand that he's bounced back as a broadcaster now, gotten into his second career here, and probably has a lot less risk of getting CTE in life. So maybe Jake Butt won in the long run. But for guys that don't have a broadcasting career in front of them, what you want to do is avoid injury in that game. That's what a lot of them have decided. So nobody hammered Marvin Harrison Jr. a year ago for standing on the sidelines in street clothes watching his team, but that was a thing where Cam Ward got a lot of abuse for actually playing, for actually risking injury for half a game, but then not the other half of the game.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another bowl games, the Gold Bowl and Military Bowl, East Carolina, they had a fight near the end of the game. Those two teams hate each other. State says it isn't a rivalry. East Carolina says it is a rivalry. They get to play each other again next season. In the Alamo Bowl, I mean, at least the Colorado players played. They had insurance policies, but they played. As for Army Louisiana Tech, Marshall got fined $100,000 for not for canceling that bowl game. They should never accept the bid in the first place, knowing all the players on that portal were happening.
Yeah, maybe. It kind of depends on what they knew and when they knew it. I mean, that's a thing where, I thought the fine was a little bit weird just because, again, if you bleed all those players, how are you supposed to show up and be any kind of a credible opponent? Which makes me a little bit antsy saying that, because much as I was loath to say anything good about Miami of Ohio previously, Marshall has been traditionally a rival of Ohio in football, although that goes back to when we used to play each other more often. But I'm somebody that has a dislike for Marshall, so I don't want to be in a position of sticking up for them. But I was kind of raising my eyebrows a bit when they got, again, absolutely bled with talent and then fined for not being there. I mean, I realized that it put the Bowl in a real tough situation finding a replacement, but when you lose that many players to the portal, I think that's probably the best argument for why the portal should not be open during Bowl season.
That's definitely a good point. That's something hopefully we'll fix down eventually. I mean, kudos to Army after losing the Navy, and even though it was a different matchup, but Army their first year in AEC, Rick, they played. They had a great season. They won the conference championship. So kudos to them. As for Michigan, in 1 year's time, you win the national championship, you beat your arch rival Ohio State, and then you beat Alabama. That's a good building momentum for next season, Rick. They had that 5-star recruit. Michigan's gonna be much better next season.
Well, you know, you just, in the parlance of Seinfeld, you just yada, yada, yada the rest of their calendar year, because they had a lot of downs in between those times here. But I will say, leading up to the national championship game last year, who'd they beat in the semis? Why, yes, Alabama. So they got that going for them as well. And, they may be tougher next year, but additional rumors of sanctions continuing to swirl around them at this point here, going back to the sign-stealing scandal, asterisk. An official one to the national championship that so many people like myself have already put the unofficial asterisk on. So the other games here that were during bowl season, there were a couple of ones in between the quarterfinals of the playoffs and the semifinals, and those were, of course, the Duke's Mayo Bowl on January 3rd, Minnesota 24, Virginia Tech 10, and then the Bahamas Bowl. That one used to be much earlier in the bowl season. I remember that from when FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway went down there the 1 year to watch our Ohio Bobcats play. I remember that was during Christmas season. Buffalo gets the invite out of the MAC this time around and absolutely smacks around Liberty 26-7. So Liberty, who goes from getting blown out a year ago in the Fiesta Bowl, but at least making it there, goes to not being very competitive in the Bahamas Bowl. So big step down for them. Last two games of the bowl
also,
season.
Rick, we have the Gator Bowl with Lane Kiffin running up scores the entire game against Duke. He was going for touchdowns the entire game, 52-20 over Duke. Rick, Lane Kiffin, he's lucky those teams don't play each other ever again.
That's right. I actually missed that one. Yeah, 52-20. Yeah, Lane Kiffin, class act that he is. And then of course the other one from January 2nd, Texas State 30, North Texas 28, the First Responder Bowl in Dallas. So both of the teams playing on relatively home turf here for this one. So I'm sure that was a real thriller.
In the Mayo Bowl, I mean, the coach getting dumped. He embraced it the most out of any coach with that Mayo dump. The other ones had hats on. He embraced it. Row the boat.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're PJ Fleck getting a win in the Mayo Bowl is sort of the pinnacle for what has been his time at Minnesota. I mean, not to dump on him, but when they hired him, and I've alluded to this before, much like when they hired Richard Pitino in the basketball program, it was with the thought of hopefully lifting them beyond where they were at that point in time. And they have instead maintained where they were, improved on it somewhat, but still not become one of the big boys in the Big Ten. And that's before the Big Ten expanded with some of the big powers that have come in. So, again, as we say, so the Big Ten, the SEC, the first year of the mega conferences post the expansion of the new teams that were coming in to make them even more powerful. So, again, the rich have gotten richer with those two conferences there. And then, of course, you've got the sort of in-between here of the Big 12, the ACC. As we said previously, they're closer to the Mountain West than they are the Big Two, as evidenced by the fact that the Mountain West yoinked away one of the two byes for the playoffs here. But as we head into next year, again, a lot that we learned this year about what it's going to look like. We lived our whole lives wondering what a scenario like this would look like. Now we've seen it. And then next year we get to see how much of the fabric of the season is going to replicate itself and how much of it is going to be different. Are we going to see more teams going undefeated later in the season? Are we going to see more of that kind of stuff happening as opposed to some of the big boys taking an L early on? I do know the first weekend here, you had texted me a thing. There's a lot of big games the first weekend, none of them bigger than a rematch of the national semifinals as Texas comes to Ohio State. Those two schools, I believe, have a two-year home-and-home. So that will be as big as it gets in college football early on. And
since you're a big Ohio State fan, what do you think about Jeremiah, the wide receiver, getting rumored $4.5 million for Miami transfer?
Yeah, I mean, Smith's not going anywhere because this is a thing where if anybody actually thinks that any school's going to outbid Ohio State, think again. That's the kind of thing that I might have said snidely 6 years ago, but I'm saying it legitimately today. But again, also, too, let us not forget, so much of this goes back when you look at this and the way that Ohio State, I remember back in the day, like when me and you were younger, you know, like Penn State with the linebackers, and there would be USC with the running backs if you go even further back. The reason that Ohio State has been the preeminent wide receiver school of the last minimum 15 years and maybe further back than that. Why do they get all these top recruits? Probably no stronger reason than Brian Hartline being the position coach there. And that's the thing. If you're Jeremiah Smith, and again, one of the things about him, he's smart enough to realize that he still has some things to learn. And how scary is it going to be when he learns more and gets even better? But you learn more by being at the feet of Brian Hartline, not going to some other school and a wishing and a hoping that you get a position coach that can continue to enhance you. So anybody that wants to come after Jeremiah Smith, I am going to boldly predict is just wasting their time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, come on, Ohio State, the juggernaut. I mean, they're one of the favorites to win again next season. And the thing is, obviously people are going to be looking at the game against Michigan, but like I said, even if they lose, they can still get in. So I wouldn't panic over one game. But college football's fun. I mean, it's been an exciting season. And also, I want to mention that North Dakota State earned its 10th FCS title after knocking off undefeated Montana State 35-32. It's a real shame Rick, North Dakota State can't move up to FBS. They should be in FCS.
I would agree with that. And let me send a congratulations to FDH Motorsports editor Mike Petak, who is a big fan of that program. So I know he must have been very happy when they brought that one home. So again, an excellent college football season, and a lot to look forward to for next year. And as we talked about before, year one of Bill Belichick at this level. Can't wait. The fall can't get here quickly enough to see what that's going to look like. But
week one against TCU, Chapel Bill.
So as always, nobody better to break it down with than you, Fran Stuckberry from R Sports Central. Thank you so much for being here for this breakdown, analysis, and review, my friend.
Thanks, Rick. Happy to be here and looking forward to catching up with you during the offseason.
Very much so. Thanks very much, Fran, for being here. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1807.